Welcome to the Balkan Talks, where we discuss everything business and news related to the Western Balkans. The Balkan Talks is brought to you by WBBG, your partner for doing business in the Western Balkans region. Enjoy the episode.
So, this is very interesting because Montenegro is a lot closer to EU accession and already a NATO member.
Yeah.
In comparison to Albania.
Yeah.
And I know that Malta has a similar structure that they you can also invest like 250k and become a national citizen. And it's gotten they've gotten a lot of, you know, critique for that from the EU because, you know, think about it. If you're some rich Saudi, or even if you're just some, you know, Russian oligarch, or even just some businessman from, I don't know where, Africa or Indonesia, if you have 250k, you can buy EU citizenship, you know, by buying into Malta. And Montenegro can become the next candidate for this, you know, option or this route into becoming an EU
citizen. It is a bit weird, like, that would be...
for sale.
Hey, Sandro, we're back with another episode. Here we are in the studio. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Sanir, and looking forward to another episode of the Balkan Talks.
Likewise, man. Me
too. And I hope our listeners are also.
I hope you guys are excited. I mean, if not, we will try to make you excited with a very topical,
we'll
topical
be very
episode.
High energy.
High energy, right?
To make you excited.
Exactly. So how's your day been?
Well, it's been great.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got some political news in the Netherlands today that made me very happy.
Oh, really?
So,
should we mention that here?
Maybe
it won't age too well if people listen.
It might not age well, but on the day of recording, there was some interesting news about this local party here in the Netherlands, which basically blew itself up.
Ah, right.
Which I always enjoy watching, you know, a train wreck happening.
Really? So just kind of to explain a little bit, Sandro does not actually enjoy watching train wrecks of parties. He's very happy because he opposes the political views of this party.
Yeah, as long I like political train wrecks as long as not my own party.
Exactly. So, yeah. That's always nice. Yeah. Okay, so you had a reasonably good day.
Yeah.
Okay.
You?
Okay. Yeah, me too, definitely. So I didn't follow the politics too closely, but you know, I had a productive day, so that was good. That was good. I was looking forward to this podcast, and here we are. So I thought maybe we could, I mean, this is not coming, falling out of the sky. We kind of talked about this. We prepared this beforehand, of course. So what are we talking about today, Sandro?
Sanir, have you not often wondered when you close your eyes, you're on a Croatian beach on holiday?
Oh, I close my eyes right now.
Yeah. And then, you know, you're on this beautiful island and you're thinking, would it not be great to have a beach house here? Or would it not be great to have a second property here?
Yeah, I did think that. I think a lot of people that visited the region.
And not just, you know, the Croatian beach, but maybe the Bosnian woods or somewhere in Serbia or Lake Ohrid.
My dream is like having a house on top of a hill or on top
of Triglav, or is that a bit?
I don't know. Where's Triglav?
That's
Slovenia. Am I saying something really, really?
Mountain. It's a quite famous mountain.
Exactly. Yeah. So now you know how much I know of geography.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, so that was my dream, like a big house on a hill. Definitely property. So I think a lot of people have thought about this, mostly like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The beachfront, because that's of course very
9 out of 10 times
somewhere near a lake or the sea. And Croatia of course is very popular. Montenegro is becoming more popular. So we're going to talk about this. Actually, we're going to talk about real estate and buying property and investing, maybe also a little bit in the broader sense.
Yeah, of course. So not just, you know, the Croatian islands. If you want to hear all about that, go to the first episode of this season with Sander Schimmelpenning.
That was a good one.
You know, tells us about his Croatian adventure.
Yeah.
But we'll be talking about it in the broad sense. So, all the countries in the region, right?
Correct, correct. So we will talk about the Western Balkan Six, the WB6. These are the countries in the region that haven't yet joined the European Union. And we will be touching on Slovenia and Croatia as well, because, you know, Croatia, of course, a very prominent one with the coast, and Slovenia is often kind of overlooked because some
underrated.
Underrated as well. People sometimes think, the Slovenes, I think themselves also sometimes, that they're not really part of the Balkans,
yeah,
but they are.
We are still keeping them in.
We're not letting them leave. We're not letting you go, bros. Yeah.
You're not fake Austrians. No. You are Yugoslavs.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about all these countries. So what we kind of want to go country by country, talk a little bit about the facts and figures that we collected for you before this episode. Mm-hmm. What are the pros? What are the cons? Maybe some other interesting facts and details that you might want to keep in mind when looking at this, when doing your own research.
Yeah. If you want to invest in real estate or even perhaps move there. You know,
oh, yeah, exactly.
That's becoming a more popular move.
Yeah.
Also for non-European citizens, people from all over the world, considering, you know, the Western Balkans as their entry point for Europe. Exactly. So that's also something which we will be covering. So yeah, very much looking forward to this country breakdown, if you can call it like that.
Yeah.
Property breakdown.
Yeah, of course. And of course, at the end of the episode, we will also answer a few questions that we received from our listeners. Bear in mind, you can send us your own questions. If you're hearing this and you want to send us a question for us to answer, feel free, go over to our social media channels, give us a like, give us a follow, and send in a question, and we will answer them during the podcast.
Yeah.
So
if it's a reasonable question.
If it's a reasonable question, of course. If it's unreasonable, we will maybe answer it privately in a DM.
we can you know, still consider that as an option.
Exactly. So let's go back to the main topic.
Where do you want to start? I'm going to give you the choice.
Ooh, you want to give me the choice. Okay, let me think. So you want to go alphabetically?
We should have had like a random number generator and just have, you know, attached a country to the number, and then it would have just thrown out a number.
I think, you know, in the frame of like political neutrality, we should go alphabetically. So nobody's like, why did that country come first, or why, you know.
Albania is then the first.
Exactly.
Albania.
So Albania. Sander, what can you tell us from your information and research about Albania? But just a little before we get into the countries, Sandro, I know that you are active in the real estate as well. So you have some knowledge there as well. You are actually...
I live and breathe this stuff, man.
Yeah. You're the real estate kingpin.
I'm the mogul, real estate mogul in the making.
Just kind of to establish your expertise role like in this, discussion.
It's more also on the technical side. So I think that's not always super necessary to have if you consider investing in real estate. Mm-hmm. Albania immediately is a very interesting country.
Why?
Because, you know, I always say to people, and it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but I would also always say to people, if you have a bag with money and you have no idea where to put it, the Albanian coast is a great investment. Because, you know, if you look at it logically, the coast is basically the same as Montenegro and Croatia, minus the islands, but fair enough for Croatia at least. But it's still a beautiful Adriatic coast and still very much underdeveloped in sense of, you know, opportunities and seaside resorts and cities, which are more popular in that regard. So in that sense, it's very interesting, you know, because something which we will be noticing more often, you know, when we do this country breakdown now is... It's all about location, you know, that's one of the most important things. So the fact that Albania has a huge coastal strip is a huge advantage with regards to real estate investment looking forward, you know, 10, 20 years when it becomes more developed.
I mean, tourism is what kind of drives Croatia's and I think also Montenegro's. But look at Greece, you know,
that's
tourism is a very, very big and very important driving factor. So it's going to be similar, I think, for Albania.
Yeah, but Albania, you know, when you look at the Croatian development, you know, they relied so much on tourism for their entire development that you see what the potential of it is also in combination with real estate, what it can do for a country. But okay, that's Croatia. Albania. So when you look at their advantages, the coastline is a great advantage, you know, the sea and underdeveloped part of it. Still relatively undiscovered for most Europeans, but also non-Europeans. You know, going to Albania, you have some kind of idea of where is that and what can you do there. There's a lot of space. It's a still quite spacious country, not very densely populated. So you have some room, wiggle room there, and it's very cheap if you come with a Western currency like the dollar or the euro. Mm-hmm. $1 can go a long way in Albania. So mm-hmm. with that regard, it's also interesting time to get in. However, Albania has one very big but in its real estate market. Mm-hmm. And that's black money, criminal money in the local economy. Because, you know, Albania has this problem of, you know, its image with a lot of crime and drug trade and human trafficking, you know, yeah. the stereotypical negative sides of Albania. But this also has a very real effect on the real estate market, because what it does is that, so just to give you a figure, the rough estimate for 2019 was mm-hmm. that around 500 million euros were laundered through the real estate market in Albania.
That's a big number.
That's a big number if you consider that Albania's population is, you know, it's not 10 million people. So that's a big number.
How much is the population of Albania? Is it like...
It's like 4 million off the top of my head. Or is it less?
Yeah.
Now it's 2 point. Okay.
Not too much, at least.
Not too much, but yeah. But what the difficult thing is then that, of course, the real estate market is a very fundamental market. You know, it's very much based on fundamental economy and the way, you know, what are the underlying values of locations, of property, demand and supply. It's very, you know, very much dependent on that side of the economy. But what happens when a lot of black money is introduced and injected in that market is that it drives up prices, artificially, which in turn hurts the regular buyers. Let's call it like that, which has a very negative effect on the prices, in the sense that they are a lot higher than they should be.
If it developed organically, of course.
Yeah, of course. If they would have a real value, you know, the real value versus the value that people have to pay for them, because there's a lot of black money under it, you know, driving it up. Right. So that makes it very difficult to you know, when you're looking at, is this a sound investment, a stable investment? Mm-hmm. You might be buying a place that is a lot more expensive than it should be. And when, you know, some kind of case gets out, you know, the value might drop significantly. So you got a big risk.
There.
Yeah. Yeah. Big risk on the cat in the bag situation, you know?
I see. Yeah. That's a big risk, I would say. So just to throw it in there,
2.9
million,
less, yeah,
something like that, almost 3 million people.
So when you think that you then have 500 million euros laundered to that market, and you know there's another side to it, because what you also see in Albania is that a lot of public tenders and a lot of public, you know, when they set out to do new building and construction projects, there's a lot of, you know, corrupt influence underneath that. So a lot of, what you will see is, this was quite common in the US during the mafia New York 70s, 80s, you know, practice. And what you would have is that, let's say you have a certain project which has to be built, and the government writes out a tender for it, you know, public tender on mm-hmm. which construction companies can respond and write in. And let's say there are four construction companies in Albania, you know, example. What they can do is, because, you know, the idea of a tender is that the four companies will write themselves in and they will put in, you know, for what amount they can build, you know, how much it would cost the government, what are their prices, and that they will compete in that way, you know, the cheapest or the best offer will win. But what happens in these countries at times is that at least in Albania, it's proven that it happens a lot, is that the construction companies between themselves will make agreements on how much they will, you know, put in the offer, which will be higher than it has to be. But because there will be no cheaper offer, because the, all the construction companies together make some kind of deal, then the government, you know, overpays while it is, well, it isn't a real, right, you know, the real price. It's not a real price.
Like, it's there. That's basically a cartel, right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a cartel. And, right, you know, the mafia was very famous for influencing this in New York in the 70s. Mm. That they would, you know, they would just drive the price up this way and they would distribute the projects among the construction companies. So if there were like four companies and 20 projects, everybody would get five projects, but all of them on such a steep value that, you know, it would pay off.
It would still
all
be interesting for them. Yeah, yeah, I, yeah, see. Yeah. I see. Okay.
And that happens in Albania a lot.
Okay. Okay. I see. Is Albania really an exception to that in the region? Or?
It is very strong in Albania. It is a lot less strong in other countries. Northern Macedonia is also getting it more and more, but that's a result spilling over from Albania.
I see.
That's also a bit, you know, iffy. Those countries are dealing with this more than others. You know, corruption is a case in a lot of these countries, but you know, it is a really Albanian case of black money in the real estate market. Mm. Specifically, in the real estate market, is a bit of an Albanian problem.
Okay, okay, I see.
So that's the big con. So, if you're looking to take that risk, you know, go for it.
Yeah,
but it is a bit difficult. Yeah, and you know, in general, the image and Tirana is not a very attractive city to buy real estate in. That's also something that has to be said.
Okay. And why is that?
Due to the way the city developed last century. So a lot of, plain architecture, a lot of unfinished buildings too. You know, Tirana's quite famous for its unfinished buildings everywhere.
That's also very, like, it can be related to something similar you mentioned, like the, yeah, black money and all that.
Yeah,
you know?
So that's, yeah, that happens a lot. So yeah, that's Albania for you.
All right. So just on the to mention, like, with Albania as well, you can actually, you can like get a citizenship in Albania through investment as well. This is something that we saw a little bit for most countries in the region, actually. For Albania, it's possible to get a residency by investment. So not a citizenship, but a residency by investment. If you invest at least $100,000. So
that's not a lot.
That's not a lot. Relatively. Yeah. So, and then after that, you can get a citizenship if you live 5 years in Albania and, you know, go through the regular program to gain a residency, to a citizenship, excuse me. So it's relatively cheap, and Albania is further away from accession than is Northern Macedonia and Montenegro, but it is definitely on the list for EU accession. It's going to be a bit further down the road, probably.
Yeah.
So that's why there's also foreign nationals looking for potentially gaining citizenship in Albania through investments, right?
But you know which country is even more interesting in this regard?
Well, from what I would guess, from what I've heard, it's Montenegro.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You want to start with Montenegro? That's also a very interesting case.
Okay. Yeah, we can do Montenegro. Visa. So Montenegro in 2019, I believe, they got a they changed the laws a little bit concerning these citizenship by investment programs. And basically, Montenegro also has very, very attractive kind of tax laws. They have a flat tax rate of about 8%. And the country is really, the government decided to really focus on this, to draw in foreign investment. Montenegro is a part of the NATO pact. If I mention this correctly,
that's also a big advantage.
Definitely,
regarding the countries. Yeah.
When it comes to stability,
of course.
When it comes to kind of not just, you know, military, but economic, very important. And they're on their way for EU accession. Now, in Montenegro, you you can do a similar thing. You can gain citizenship by investment, although it's a bit higher than in Albania.
But it's quicker too. You don't have to wait 5 years, right?
So you will have to, you can't get it right away. So the process does take a while to become a citizen. For Montenegro, it's still going to be a couple of years. I'm iffy on if it's five, but it's not, you don't get it within a few months. Definitely not.
No, okay.
But residency is I think possible within a few months, like after you've done the investment and so on. So you could do, so for Montenegro, you can do like 250,000 USD or euro.
Yeah.
And they make a difference. They make a distinction between the more developed regions and the underdeveloped regions of the country. So if you're in the south near the coast, you need to invest at least 450,000. If you're in the north, away from the coast, Podgorica, the capital, and further north, 250,000.
So this is very interesting because Montenegro is a lot closer to EU accession and already a NATO member.
Yeah.
In comparison to Albania.
Yeah.
And I know that Malta has a similar structure that they you can also invest like 250K and become a national citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gotten they've gotten a lot of, you know, critique for that from the EU because, you know, think about it. If you're some rich Saudi or even if you're just some, you know, Russian oligarch or even just some businessman from, I don't know where, Africa or Indonesia, if you have 250K, you can buy EU citizenship. You know, by buying into Malta, and Montenegro can become the next candidate for this, you know, option or this route into becoming an EU.
It is a bit
citizen.
Weird, like that would be
for sale.
Yeah,
basically,
it is kind of weird. You know, it's the same thing with Northern Macedonia. Basically, they're also on the way to EU accession, but the golden visa, as they call it, it's gaining popularity. You know, it's very...
Yeah, I've even seen this article about South Africans choosing to go to Montenegro because of this visa option. So so they can become, you know, Europeans.
I see. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Or rich South Africans then, you know, let's be honest, but still.
Yeah.
But okay, going back to the real estate market in Montenegro.
So one of the things that I, you know, to mention a few cons for Montenegro. Montenegro is a very small country, very small. I don't know if they have a 500,000 people.
No, it's like 300,000 to 400,000. This
exactly,
I know.
Exactly. So it's a very small market as well. And there's a very high reliance on tourism. Now, this can also be a positive. Like, this can be very positive if you're looking to invest near the coast.
Yeah.
Hotels, condos, apartments, all that.
And if there's no COVID around.
Exactly. So, I mean, you see now that the tourism.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's it might not be the best business investment on the short term, because if you're looking for kind of investing there, probably it's going to be real estate related to tourism. And that's something that's going to take a longer period to kind of... So you're going to have to do it for slightly different reasons.
But I remember seeing articles about these super rich, you know, getting to Kotor, Bay of Kotor and Tivat and those places where they buy real estate and you know, developing into some kind of new Saint-Tropez-esque thing. Like, you've seen this, right?
Yeah,
I've
seen it. Yeah, of course.
I'm quite fascinated about this, like how they discovered. I mean, okay, let's be honest. You know, Bay of Kotor, beautiful, you know, beautiful place. Would that not be, you know, potential to you know, be some kind of super rich playground?
Definitely. I mean, it has the potential, but I think now just the situation is, you know, with COVID, is not really the best, I would say. So once again, what I meant earlier is if that's kind of your goal, this tourism, I think that's the best way forward for investment in Montenegro, because the economy is very touristic, like reliant on tourism. But outside of that, it's going to be a bit more tricky, I think. I mean, there's some great industrial zones there as well, but we're, you know, it's kind of a different type of business, you know, different type of,
very limited.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One thing that's also good to mention for Montenegro is I mean, this is kind of related to the time that we live in, but recently, quite recently, there were elections in Montenegro. And you saw a kind of a shift from progressive pro-EU stance to flipping a little bit towards more a classical conservative
pro-Russia,
pro-Serbia stance. And what that will mean for the country's economy, EU accession is still kind of unclear. But that's something to kind of keep in mind as well. So Montenegro was very, you know, relatively speaking, was very progressive. It was moving aggressively towards EU, appeasing the EU and all that. And
maybe,
that kind of changed
a little bit. Too aggressively. It's backlash.
Maybe, But that's something to kind of keep in mind. That changed now. So what the effects of that will be is as of yet unclear, the long-term effects.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, another country was very much dependent on tourism.
Oh, boy. Let me guess.
Is it Moldova?
Is Moldova in the Western Balkans?
No. It can be.
Croatia, of course. Croatia.
Yeah, Croatia.
Just a side note, we kind of dropped the alphabetic order.
Yeah, no.
It's okay. It's okay.
Let's do it by logic because we're talking about the touristic places anyways.
Yeah, no worries.
Croatia. So Croatia, I mean, for real estate, the move is basically two places, either the coast or Zagreb.
That's it.
You know, because the rest basically is the prices are even going down, I think, while, you know, over the board and all along the Dalmatian coast.
Yeah.
And in Zagreb, it's going, you know, the last 10 years have been crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, the rest of the country is still lacking. And I think that's very, you know, testament to how dependent Croatia is on their tourism sector.
Exactly. Yeah.
And of course, you have the islands, you know, becoming more and more popular. People, you know, buying real estate there. I think, you know, you can't go wrong with real estate on the Croatian coast, you know, because simply said, there's only so much coast and already getting so popular. And, you know, I think the popularity of Croatia will, you know, stay on the rise for the coming years.
Yeah. I mean, it's still not full, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's not full. But the interesting thing about the Croatian coast is that the government made it very difficult to develop new properties on new places since like 2 years ago.
Okay.
And they made it, they made it a lot. They didn't make it more difficult if you already have some kind of seaside town or some kind of area where there's already some buildings. You know, if you want to develop something new there, that's not an issue. But if you would, let's say you just want to buy a piece of nature, but there's nothing, and start developing that into some kind of seaside resort or, you know, let's say 5 beach houses, or I don't know what your plans are, that has become a lot more difficult.
Like in what sense?
Well,
is it impossible or is it just
it's possible, but the bureaucratic pathway to getting there and getting permission to do that has become
tougher.
And that's because, I see. You know, the Croatian government also sees, you know, how popular we're getting, and we don't want the entire coast to basically be concrete, you know, just putting it.
They want to kind of also preserve the nature and the beauty of the coast itself.
Yeah.
It's actually a smart move. You know, I would support that definitely. But that makes it even more scarce. The real estate.
Existing locations become more valuable.
Exactly.
Because of that.
Exactly. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that's a bit more difficult.
Of course, one thing to kind of mention, I want to mention this, like if you're looking for real estate for different purposes, that's not entirely what we're talking about here. But if you're looking for real estate to, you know, to build a logistics center, something,
or offices,
you can go
to Zagreb,
go to Zagreb, or like somewhere north in the country. It's very well connected with highways. It's close. It is actually the EU,
and also a big advantage. We're almost forgetting that.
Exactly. It's like Zagreb is close to Slovenia. It's close to Hungary. So the north of the country, it's very flat, it's very accessible, very well connected. So you have that, but that's more, you know, that's more kind of attuned to business, to doing actual business than just investing in real estate.
Yeah.
As we mean it in this sense.
Yeah. Croatia is, you know, touristic real estate is the biggest part.
Exactly.
There.
Exactly. Yeah. All right.
So, and of course, don't forget, it's just in general popular and has a good image. And those are also factors which you have to, you know, take into account regarding stability and attractiveness.
Yeah, but you don't forget one thing. Croatia is not below, quote unquote, below, or sorry, above citizen by investment programs either. So they have, it's okay. Admittedly, it's much harder and much more difficult. There's more requirements than, for example, Montenegro or Albania, but they have a minimum set investment of 200,000 USD. You can gain residency, and then you have to, that's for residency, and then you have to live there for 5 years. Like for 5 years full time, basically, to get, to become eligible for citizenship, Croatian citizenship. So it's possible actually, but you can't get it right away.
So okay.
If that's, yeah. I mean, it's not, it's
also possible. EU citizenship.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, if because the process is so long, the due diligence is also kind of on such a level that you can't.
Yeah, you must really want to.
You really want to.
Be like, a Croatian.
Exactly. So you got to have to move there and you got to have to like stay there and live there and have a life there.
And also one of the things about Croatia, which is a bit of a con, there are quite high transaction costs. So buying real estate in Croatia is relatively expensive, also due to government regulations have become more, you know, have become tighter the last few years. They have made that more expensive too. Okay. So also good to keep in mind, really more expensive than the other countries in the region.
Okay. Significantly so.
Okay. Good All one. Right. Croatia. EU member? Slovenia?
Slovenia. Yeah.
The underrated one.
The underrated one. Well,
how did you not know Triglav? Come on.
I knew Triglav, but I didn't know like Slovenia. You know, it's not top of my mind. I know Triglav. I know the name. I know it's a mountain. I didn't know.
The small Alps, or what do they call it? The junior Alps.
Yeah. Slovenia. I mean, don't hate me if you're listening to this and you're like, he doesn't know what Triglav is.
All six Slovenians.
All the Slovenians. All the Slovenians. Yeah. Anyway, so Slovenia is also like, it's basically like a very small country, like Montenegro, but it is in the EU. It is relatively well developed. So Slovenia has, actually like last year I talked to the Dutch ambassador in Slovenia, and he said, look, Slovenia is actually quite well manageable. It's a small country. You know, there's unity. There's proximity to the Central European Union.
And great location.
It's a great Austria. Location. There's not that many moving cogs. So the Slovenians took advantage of that to really push their country forward in terms of policy, in terms of development, in terms of focus on investment, on schooling. So Slovenia is quite a bit higher in standard when it comes to you know, most things when it comes to, you know, the quality of the institutions, of the how well the bureaucracy works.
It's more Western, maybe, in that sense. It's more familiar.
Exactly. So that's a very, very big advantage of Slovenia. The disadvantages, as already mentioned, it's just a small country. There's not a lot of people. There's not a lot of
who can rent your stuff if you're looking to put your house on the market. The tenant market is quite limited.
Yeah,
it's quite expensive.
We saw some information. You saw something about like the prices in Slovenia getting really high.
Yeah, there was seventh in Europe last year in the the average house. The rising prices of houses in Slovenia.
Yeah.
They were like seventh in Europe, which is quite good for such a country. But I think that's also a result of, you know, people discovering those countries more and more. And Slovenia has been, you know, really on the map with regards to, you know, ecotourism, tourism in nature, beautiful hiking.
Yeah.
Like, so Triglav, that's why.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
fishing and all that.
Yeah. So the whole nature holiday idea and real estate connected to that is really popular.
Yeah.
And Ljubljana has been a rising city too in that sense.
Very much so. But that's one of downsides, it's not very cheap.
It's more established.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. compared to other countries in the Western Balkans. Also, Slovenia has some coast, not as much, but they have a little coast.
Yeah, but you don't buy real estate there for the
exactly
typical, you know, holiday coastal
right
real estate, which you would consider Croatia for yeah. example.
Yeah. And I mean, same as similar to Croatia, there is a possibility to gain residency by investment. So 150K mm-hmm. minimum.
Okay.
So cheap. It's possible, yeah. But the process is going to be more stringent. Yeah. So there we go. Slovenia.
Does Serbia have a visa by investment?
Oh, I don't know. I think it does.
I have no idea if they have that.
All right. So okay, well, we don't know that one. That's a good one to
Easter egg.
Easter egg.
Whoever knows if they have that. But yeah, Serbia also a fun one.
Yeah. So tell me about Serbia.
Serbia. Yeah. Well, also one thing, you know, your euro or dollar goes a long way there. Mm. Same sense, I think, as Albania. So that's something, you know, it's a still relatively cheap country.
Yeah.
They have one also big advantage, Belgrade. Mm. You know, just the fact that they have the biggest metropole in the region, which you can, you know, rightly call a metropole, a really big city, has a natural attractive power, which, you know, makes people move there and makes it a growing city. And especially in a country as Serbia, that's important because Serbia has a, as a lot of countries have in the region, actually, we can maybe also talk about that later. They have a shrinking demographic, mm. you know, they have less people every year. And that has a big impact on the real estate market,
I see.
You know, because real estate, very, you know, simply said, you just, if you keep building more houses, you need more people to live in those houses, or you need smaller households. And in Serbia, you do see all over the world smaller households, you know, as people become more westernized and more individualistic. But having a declining population is really bad for your long-term real estate market. So that makes it more important to invest in big metropoles or attractive locations, as we actually said in the start. So Belgrade, Zagreb, Sarajevo, and the coast, basically, you know, those places. So Serbia has Belgrade. That's great. They have very low taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Their property tax is quite low. In general, it's quite cheap. So also what we said with the transaction cost. And the fact that, you know, the interesting thing with EU for Serbia is that they're not, you know, very super close to membership yet. They still have a bit to go, which makes them a bit undiscovered in that sense. But they're still really cheap. So if you'd ask me if you have to make a, you know, some kind of balance between closeness, you know, closeness to EU membership versus current prices, Serbia has the best ratio, if you ask me. You know, they're okay. still relatively cheap with regards to how close they are to EU mm-hmm. membership. And EU membership has a big impact on your real estate and property value. You know, the greatest example are Romania and Bulgaria. I remember like seeing figures. They joined in 2006, off the top of my head, and you see numbers of from them joining 5 years on that their real estate prices would go up 40% in some places,
oh,
and that,
wow.
that's a great, you know, return on investment.
Yeah.
So those are the things you really have to look at when you're considering EU membership.
So one thing that is a question I would have for Serbia, which probably also applies to Bosnia, which we will talk about in a second, but maybe also Northern Macedonia, is because there's not really a coast. So mm-hmm. the tourism is less. That tourism which exists is going to be more focused on outdoor, on like similar to Slovenia, but Slovenia is a small country. It's developed, it's close to EU and so on. Serbia doesn't have that. So what is your estimate in terms of like long, mid to long term? So 10, 20 years probably for, let's say, the development of the real estate in Serbia, inland, or even just the big cities like Belgrade.
As I said, you have to focus on
the big
places
cities.
Like Belgrade, you know, because I would really like to have some kind of message like, yeah, you can do really smart investments on the countryside, near Čačak somewhere. But just to be honest, you know, second and third tier cities, so Novi Sad, Čačak, Niš, you know, there might be some opportunities which look good. But in the long term, you know, the metrics and the data, if you just look at, you know, how these kind of countries develop in the current phase, it's not good for the real estate market. So it's a lot more, you know, it's a lot smarter to invest in a place like Belgrade and then look at, you know, commercial property too. So, you know, offices is a rising market, you know, as Belgrade is a hub where people come to work. Okay, now with the home working, it might be a bit of a different trend. But, you know, office property is quite interesting to invest in, you know, in places like Belgrade. Residential is still a thing. And Serbia has still a strong, you know, industrial sector. So around Belgrade, if you have some areas which are specialized in industrial real estate, that also might be an interesting opportunity.
Just for the for my understanding, but also for the understanding of listeners, right? No, so the reason why we say that it's actually the most interesting or the smartest to look at cities like Belgrade and not so much second tier, third tier cities or even the countryside when looking at real estate is not just because it makes sense because it's a big city, like, you know, buying in Amsterdam, it's going to be valuable, but there's a shift in demographic expected. You already see this shift going. So people are leaving the countryside and moving to these metropolitan areas, meaning there's more people pouring in to those areas and leaving the countryside, meaning that there's going to be less people and the prices are going to be lower and so on. It's going to be less
then, demand. Exactly. Said.
And then on a country level, you see a kind of a, that's a different topic in itself, kind of a brain drain going on and just young people leaving the countries, going to the West, going somewhere else to find better, you know, better lives, better jobs somewhere else. So you see a demographic shift there as well, an aging population and all that, which is also true for Bosnia, maybe even more so. More people, I think, relatively are leaving Bosnia.
Yeah, also, yeah. I think most countries, if not all, have a shrinking population, except for Kosovo.
They have a high.
Yeah, Kosovo has a rising population.
Congratulations.
And I think Northern Macedonia is like stable too. All right. But they don't have a big plus or a big minus either.
Okay.
But it's a general trend you see in a lot of countries because, you know, the Gastarbeiter and who go work in other parts. Yeah. So that's, you know, it's the same with Poland and Hungary and those countries. So
exactly.
But it's an important thing to think about.
Yeah, yeah. So moving on to Bosnia.
No, wait, Serbia cons.
Do we have cons for
Serbia?
I thought we just mentioned those.
Well, and there was one other big con.
All right.
The politics.
Ahead. The politics.
The politics. Just because of the, you know, the iffiness of the politics sometimes and instability in the public perception can make that a bit more difficult too. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe something to take into account, a certain distrust with institutions, which you also have in other countries. But in Serbia, it's also quite strong.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. All right, so finally, let's go to Bosnia. Not finally, actually. We still have Kosovo and Northern Macedonia to talk about after Bosnia. But Bosnia has a very similar situation to Serbia. But let's first talk about a few advantages of pros for Bosnia. So Bosnia is, when it comes to pricing, it's very affordable still. It's similar to Serbia. The country is relatively, it's one of the bigger countries in the region, but it's still not a huge country. There's little people there. So it's also relatively, small in the sense that, and, you know, that has some advantages. The stability when it comes to the...
stability.
I was not talking about political stability.
We'll
come to that.
Sorry, that was my the stability of reaction to
the stability to the of the coin is actually one advantage of the Bosnian currency or even the economy. It has the one of the, if not the most stable coins in the region. The Bosnian mark is tied to the euro, and it kind of the way they made it is it counters kind of the inflation. So it goes together with the euro. It's locked. So I think it's like, roughly speaking, one mark is half a euro. Not entirely.
Yeah, it's 1.98.
Exactly.
So 1 euro is 1.98 something.
Exactly. Yeah. Combine that with the fact that Bosnia has a relatively well-established, well-developed sort of established banking sector. We talked about this in a previous episode. There's lots of banks. There's a system in place. If you're moving, you know, kind of large amounts of money, it happens relatively safely in Bosnia. When it comes to real estate, however, There is some potential for real estate, but it's similar to Serbia. So looking at the big cities, basically, when you look at Sarajevo, it's the most interesting one, the region of Sarajevo, and potentially some of the other big cities, but mainly Sarajevo. Yeah,
even those are second-tier cities.
Exactly.
If you look at the regional and bigger picture, it's Sarajevo or, yeah.
That basically.
And me as a somebody from Banja Luka, yeah. It hurts to say this, but... It is Sarajevo or nothing.
Exactly. Now, well, I mean, if you're looking for outside of Sarajevo, look at other bigger cities, but probably your best bet is going to be Sarajevo.
Yeah. And even that is more debatable when you put it next to Zagreb or Belgrade. But okay.
Yeah.
If we're talking about Bosnia, it's
exactly.
Sarajevo.
So if you're looking at real estate in Bosnia, it's going to be Sarajevo. One thing that I might want to add is like an honorable mention. Bosnia does have a little bit of coast in the south. So
those
I hear you snicker.
4 meters.
I hear you snicker. Yeah. But that might also be interesting. Like if you have some coast there and
Really have a choice where on the coast you want
exactly.
to buy.
Exactly. No, but it does have some coast and there's still lots to be developed and the tourism sector in Bosnia is growing actually. Most tourism in Bosnia is tied to like outdoor. Basically, it has beautiful nature. You wouldn't believe. So people that have been to Slovenia, which is going to be more people than have been to Bosnia, I think.
If you want to hear about the tourism sector in Bosnia, go to our episode with Vildan.
Exactly.
Destination exactly. Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Exactly.
Where we talk about everything there. So
yeah. So it's going to be tourism mostly. So. In terms of real estate, look at the big city, Sarajevo. Now, the cons of Bosnia. Bosnia is notorious when it comes to kind of the complex political system that it has.
And bureaucracy.
Exactly.
Get a stamp there.
Yeah.
Another stamp there.
Exactly. So if you're familiar a little bit with the system of Switzerland, that's kind of similar to what Bosnia has. It has cantons. They all have their local governments. You have the municipalities. There's two entity level.
There's just no gold.
There's the only difference is, Bosnia doesn't have any Nazi gold. In the
yeah.
mountains.
Like, yeah. Fair enough.
So,
yeah.
So that's a big difference. So Bosnia is no member of the EU. Accession is relatively far away, probably. Yeah. There's a lot of hurdles to overcome because of the political situation in the country.
Unfortunately, yes.
It's not a member of NATO, but it's like it's been in cooperation with NATO on numerous missions, and it has a lot of bilateral and regional trade agreements. So, for example, Bosnia has with the EU certain trade agreements that give it very low or non-existent tariffs on a lot of products coming from Bosnia. So, if you're looking to produce in Bosnia or commercial real estate. Bosnia is very interesting because you don't have, for example, from the top of my head, when it comes to like wood products, when it comes to metals, very low or non-existing tariffs if you want to export to the EU. So if you combine that with relatively low
commercial real estate, daar afknippen en dan gaan we.
And that's basically kind of it for Bosnia. So that's it. Let's move on to the next
North
country.
Macedonia.
Northern Macedonia.
Not the last country. It's the second to last one, but of the big countries. Mm-hmm. So North Macedonia, it has some similar problems to Albania in the sense that, there is some corruption. There is some black money in the market. Small population. I think Macedonia has around 2 million people too, or even a bit less, 1.8 or something. So that's also quite limited. And one of the big cons of Macedonia is its location. So when you ever look at a map and look where Northern Macedonia is, it's not that fantastically located in the sense that if you're coming for a Western country, it's quite difficult to reach. And for a long time you couldn't get in through Greece either because of the border conflict and stuff. So it has been notoriously hard to reach. You can fly on Skopje, but that's if you want to fly in. So that's a bit of a disadvantage. Macedonia does have also the cheap advantage, that it is really cheap. You know, next to Serbia, I think it has the best cheap closeness to EU membership ratio, in the sense that it is still really cheap, but it is, you know, really on the way to becoming an EU member. So that's very interesting. I also had to think about, you know, Ohrid. Lake Ohrid is a great factor for Macedonia. Now, it is, I think, the biggest claim to fame with regards to tourism and touristic real estate. Skopje itself is not that interesting. And that's, I think, also due to the fact that it has little, you know, reputation among visitors to visit. And also in the country itself, you know, as we said, there's not a big, you know, a growing population, and it doesn't really, it isn't really a business hub or anything. It is for the country, but it is quite limited. So in that sense, Skopje as a real estate market by itself, quite difficult to, but it's cheap to buy and EU prospect.
Yeah.
So, yeah, perhaps very briefly, North Macedonia.
All right.
Would you buy in North Macedonia?
Probably, it wouldn't be my first choice. I'm sorry, North Macedonians, but I mean, I would look probably towards the coast more.
Fair enough. Oh yeah, okay. And Kosovo, very shortly. But Kosovo is very difficult to say something about because there are no real stable figures about the real estate market there. What we do know, they have a big growing population, so that's hopeful. And, you know, Kosovo has some kind of wiggle room in the sense that you can speculate more on the real estate market because it is, quite unstable, and discussions with Serbia and politics and, you know, the last few years have been quite eventful, to call it that way. And due to that, there is some kind of speculation factor that it can really go up but really go down too. So it would also be for the more adventurous real estate buyer, but I would still not advise it in the sense that it's very limited in, you know, big cities. Pristina is not a really big city to buy, and it's not on the coast, so it has a lot of disadvantages. So it's quite difficult to say or give any real good advice about the Kosovar real estate.
Okay. I mean, fair enough. Yeah. It's still a relatively young player in the region. Okay. I mean, we've been at it for quite a while now.
Those are the countries.
Are the countries. I think we should kind of wrap it up there, not to keep going for too long. We had some questions, but okay, I think we will answer these in the next episode because we are running a little bit short on time.
Yeah, and we really want to take the time to answer the questions.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
Maksut, sorry.
Yeah, Dan, sorry.
Yeah, we had questions from you guys.
We will answer them in the next episode. Do not hate us.
Yeah, please don't.
Yeah. All right. So let's leave it there, Sandro. It was a very interesting talk.
Yeah, well, let me finish up with a question. Where would you buy as the first recommendation or place?
I would probably buy in Montenegro, probably.
And in Podgorica or on the coast?
Makes a difference. I think on the coast, man, on the coast. Yeah. If I can kind of afford it, the Bay of Kotor does sound like a really good place to me, probably. So, but realistically, I'll be buying in closer to well, I mean, it's not too far from Bosnia. Yeah, it's close. Never mind. Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, cool. Fair enough.
Yeah, you?
Zagreb. Not because I like it, but because it has the highest winter yields.
Right. So you're looking at the money.
If you want to make money, Zagreb is the best place to go.
All right.
It's not my favorite city in the region, but the rent is just relatively high there in comparison to the purchase price. Yields are good in Zagreb. Yeah.
Sounds good.
If you want to have fun, go to Montenegro. If you want to make money, go to Zagreb.
There we go.
That's our final advice.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah. We really went to that.
Yeah, man.
The whole country breakdown in an hour. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Damn.
We did it quite good, man.
Okay.
I think. All right. Let's leave it there now for real.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Have a good day. Bye-bye. Thank you guys for listening. Listen to the lady and see you later.
You should like get it over really briefly now. Yeah, no. Thank you guys really much. And I hope you found this informative.
Yeah.
Listening about the real estate sector in the Balkans.
For sure.
And and if you really want to start investing in the region and you need some kind of business help, you can still hire us. we're always ready and able to help.
See you later, guys.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Balkan Talks. Don't forget to follow the Western Balkans Business Group on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, and at WBBG Official on Instagram. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a positive review and follow our podcast to stay up to date on all our future uploads. You might also want to check out any of the other episodes of the Balkan Talks, which are available online. If you would like to learn more about the Western Balkans and all the opportunities that exist in the region, please contact WBBG at www.wbbusinessgroup.com. WBBG, connecting the Balkans.